We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
This afternoon we go from the jazz tenor saxophone of John Ellis to Johann Sebastian Bach. We're just all over the place this afternoon. We have two guests in the studio, John Sutherland, who has compiled and arranged a new Bach cantata. And also we have Elizabeth Buckley, who is a mezzo-soprano soloist, who will be singing in this cantata that will be performed in December, on the 19th of December, on a Sunday afternoon, about 3. And she's also the conductor for the choir that's working on this new piece. John, tell us first, what gave you the idea to compile and arrange this cantata for Christmas, a new one?
I've always liked Luther's Christmas song, From Heaven Above to Earth I Come, all 15 verses of it, and was disappointed when I realized that Bach never wrote a cantata based on this chorale, as he did on many other chorales. He did, however, write numerous settings, about 4 or 5 for chorus. Several of them appear in his Christmas oratorio, and one appears in the Christmas setting of his Magnificat. And then he wrote a half a dozen organ pieces based on this chorale tune as well. So I thought, with all those settings and with all those verses, why don't we pull them together and arrange them into some continuous sequence, which is what I did, and arranged it for four-part chorus and orchestra.
And there'll be 4 solo voices as well.
Yes.
And Elizabeth's is one of them. And Elizabeth, you have just finished your doctorate at the University of Illinois in vocal performance and literature just last May, but you have had quite an extensive performing career already, and we don't have time to talk about all of it, but what are some of the highlights for you of your singing career?
I think my highlights come from my singing in oratorio. I have found myself in that realm out of not only my background, but it suits the mezzo voice so well. There are a number of wonderful pieces for both countertenor and mezzo, and so I get to live in both realms.
And you've sung quite a few. I was looking at the list on your website, Elizabeth Buckley. You've sung quite a few Bach works already.
Exactly. I've been very honored to sing with many of our fine groups here in town and also around Illinois and in Indiana. And we have wonderful resources with early music programs here in both Illinois and in Indiana with great players. So I have performed with Bach, CU Symphony Orchestra, Sinfonia de Camera, and we've done a number of wonderful productions of both the B minor Mass. I've done the Magnificat a number of times, and of course there's always Handel's Messiah.
You've performed with a number of conductors. Can you remember some of them?
Oh, all of them. I think it's a very special relationship you have with a conductor when you work on a piece. You not only do the piece and performance, but you spend weeks leading up to it, speaking about the music itself and also rehearsing. And so that piece not only lives in your memory as a piece that you studied with a composer in mind and what they wanted, but the time you spent with the musicians and the conductor.
We're going to be hearing a few cuts of music that are part of this cantata. John, why don't you tell us about the first one? It's going to be the first movement, right?
Yes, the first movement is a setting of the first verse, of course, and it's for a four-part chorus. It's the most daunting of all the sections that we've rehearsed. It will sound familiar to many people because it is taken almost directly from Bach's Christmas setting of the Magnificat. And this will be the opening chorus for this new cantata.
All right. And before we hear that, tell us, you say there's going to be a small orchestra.
Yes, we've enlisted two violins, a viola, cello, and string bass, and oboe.
Okay. And other soloists, who will they be?
We will have, as our soprano soloist, Audrey Valance. She has sung with Bach many times. I will be singing the alto part.
The Baroque artist.
Yes, Carl. Exactly. Yes. And then the tenor is still a little tentative, but I think I have found my tenor. So he has to read through it first. It's always difficult to find tenors.
Yes.
And then we have a wonderful bass in Chris Holman, who is also an organist like myself.
And you are an organist, a violinist, a mezzo-soprano soloist, and a choral conductor.
I know. You get to do it all. It's really fun. I was very fortunate. My parents were able to give me piano lessons, and then my father being a Lutheran pastor, you get to sit at the organ. So I learned to play organ at the age of 13, and from that have had many great experiences on different instruments. And singing and choral conducting is where I really find my passion.
And before we hear this sample of the music that's going to be performed at this live concert on Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock, December 19, at St. Matthew's Lutheran Church in Urbana, any last words about what we're going to hear? All right, let's just go right to the music. So we've just heard the first movement, a motet, you said this was, John.
Right, and they sang the simple chorale first, and then they repeated in the motet style, which is the first movement of our new cantata.
Okay, let's talk about some of these words for our listeners who may not know what a cantata is or a motet. Elizabeth, you want to start off?
Certainly. If we talk about the history of the cantata, we think first of the Italian cantatas, which were for solo voice prominently, and then the cantata that, or the way we are using the word cantata with this piece is meaning that we have several voices. In this case, we have four parts, soprano, alto, tenor, and bass, and then we are accompanied by instruments, and we will be accompanied by basically a string quartet with a double bass, a portative organ that will be there to support the choral parts, and then we'll have a solo obbligato part in the oboe.
Ah, how nice. And again, we're preparing for a concert which will be performed at St. Matthew Lutheran Church on Fowler Road in Urbana. That's just south of Sunnycrest Shopping Center. And will be Sunday, December 19 at 3 o'clock. How long will this whole cantata last?
The cantata itself is approximately half an hour. We are supplementing it with organ music before and after, so I anticipate that the entire concert will take approximately 1 hour.
About an hour. And who will be playing the pipe organ there? There's a wonderful instrument in St. Matthew's Lutheran Church.
Yes, we have several organists, and I do need to emphasize that this concert is being funded by the generous donations of the members of the East Central Illinois chapter of the American Guild of Organists. And we're very excited that they're helping us with this project. This is a project that John has been interested in doing for a while, and with their generous help, we can pay for the instrumentalists. And the generous help of all of our choir members, this is not easy music to be singing. So we're having lots of fun preparing it. And then a good friend of mine, and I know she was on your show recently, Julie Beiler, who is the conductor for the chorale here in town, and I've sung with them. They're a great group. She is going to be our guest conductor to pull the whole thing together and, most importantly, to be up there so I can be supporting the altos. So this is going to be a joint effort by many different organizations, namely the AGO chapter here in town, and with many wonderful friends, they're going to be playing instruments.
And because of the grant you received from the AGO, the American Guild of Organists locally, it is a free concert and open to the public.
Yes, it is free. And two or three more people I have to mention are the organists that will be playing on this. Jeremy House is our organist at St. Matthew, and we are very excited. He is going to be playing, along with myself, the Pachelbel arrangement of Vom Himmel Hoch, and I will be playing the prelude, he will be playing the fugue, and then he has a wonderful von Heist piece, Emmanuel von Heist, and then the real showcase is Keith Williams, who is the organist at St. John's Lutheran in Champaign, and he will be premiering a piece that was recently commissioned by a composer, is he out of Peoria, organ composer, and this piece will take not only Vom Himmel Hoch, which is From Heaven Above to Earth I Come, that chorale tune, but it will also have Ein Festeberg. So this will be a truly Lutheran offering at the very end of the program. We're very excited to have him join us.
Very nice.
Mike Fisher also will be playing a set of variations on the same chorale tune, Vom Himmel Hoch. Mike is the organist at Emmanuel Memorial Episcopal Church in Champaign.
So it'll be an ecumenical organ concert as well as a new cantata for Christmas, From Heaven Above to Earth I Come. John, I said a bit about Elizabeth, I elicited some information from her. Let's let our listeners know a bit of your background. You've loved J.S. Bach for decades. How did you first get interested in Bach's music? Of course, as a Lutheran pastor, you're forced to hear it a lot, whether you like it or not.
I first came in contact with the music of Bach when I was studying the organ, and I was introduced to any organist that advances beyond the beginning stages is presented with the music of Bach. And I began to see the genius of his music there. And then after I got into college, I was in a choir that performed some of the great choral works of Bach, and I was hooked.
Now, for people who don't have a musical background and who aren't sure how to listen to this kind of music, because Bach's music requires some attention and it requires some concentration and it requires some memory. Tell us how to listen. Maybe Elizabeth, what would you suggest?
I always suggest when listening to classical music, if you can find the melody. And what is wonderful about this offering that we have here with using a chorale tune, you're going to hear that again and again, each verse. So you'll become more and more familiarized with that tune. And it will make each verse, I think, feel more comfortable to the listener as they feel that they're hearing a new and wonderful variation each verse. And we will be singing them in English. So we will have the words printed in the bulletin. And this is also a hymn that we often sing in many different churches for Advent.
And so Christian folks can appreciate it as for the words as well as the music. What about people who are of other religious traditions or none or who just enjoy some music but perhaps don't know much about Bach? Is it helpful to think about, you know, what a fugue is, how the melody starts here and then it starts in again and it somehow weaves together? And
I think that's a wonderful way to start looking at or thinking of the construction of this type of music. I was fortunate. I have a little bit of Kodály training in my background, and I studied at the Kodály Institute in Hungary. And their main focus is to teach part singing through rounds. Uh-huh. So I always, when you're talking to people, if they get a little overwhelmed by all of this, what you can do is start by talking about a canon or a round, row, row, row your boat, and how that layers a part over each other part as the new voice enters.
Okay, let's give them an example. You start off, row, row, row your boat, then John will do it, and then me. You start.
Okay. Row, row, row your boat gently
row,
down the stream.
Row, row your boat,
merrily, 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 life is but a
there
dream.
We go. All right, that's a great example. Okay. So Bach is doing this in a more complicated way.
Definitely.
But if you can follow row, row, row your boat and hear the various entrances and hear how it still fits together somehow, it takes great skill to compose that and also to sing it, you were saying.
Definitely. I think our tradition of four-part chorale singing in the Lutheran Church is very helpful to the singers when preparing a work like this. And I think the counterpoint that you're hearing when you hear four parts together is not just the marriage of the melody, but it's the marriage of it with harmony. And so what you'll hear in this is you'll hear a somewhat non-traditional continuo group because the organ is not throughout the piece, but we will have the part repeated in the strings also. So it's like weaving a fabric into a piece.
Now, we've used four words that mean very close to the same thing: counterpoint, fugue, canon, round. We won't worry about the distinctions, but if you're familiar with any one of those, you'll be able to appreciate this kind of music.
Well, and I think what's really wonderful is this is for the holiday season, and we're trying to make sure that we have as many choir members from other churches joining us. So I have a definite yes from members at Grace Methodist, just north of us, and then hopefully a few members from a church I used to serve at, Good Shepherd Lutheran, and then I have other conductor friends in town that are passing out scores to their choir members. So we're hopeful to have some representation from at least three to four different churches in town.
And if we have listeners who would like to join the choir, if they have experienced sight reading and can learn things quickly, who do they call?
We would love to have you. You can email me at my personal email, which is mezzo@elizabethbuckley.com, or you can call.
And mezzo is
M-E-Z-Z-O. Thank you. Yes, right. Exactly. And then our phone number for St. Matthew's, if you'd like to give them a call, is, I have to look at it. I just wrote it down before I came in, 367-1189.
So those numbers again, 367-1189, or your email is
mezzo@elizabethbuckley.com. We have three rehearsals before the performance itself. They are on Saturday the 11th from 11 until 12 at St. Matthew, and then the next Saturday again at 11 until noon, and that's on the 18th before the concert, and then we'll be meeting before the concert at 1:30 to run through the piece again.
Very good. And let me introduce our guests again, Elizabeth Buckley, who is a mezzo-soprano soloist for this piece and director of the choir at St. Matthew Lutheran Church, and John Sederland, a Lutheran pastor, who is the a compiler and arranger of this new Bach cantata for Christmas, From Heaven Above to Earth I Come. Let me remind listeners, you may call in and join this conversation, ask a question, make a comment. If you're in Champaign-Urbana, the number is 333-9455. Perhaps you're listening on the Internet or it's a long-distance call, 1-800-222-9455 is our toll-free number. So in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Elsewhere, 1-800-222-9455. We're always eager to have listeners ask a question, make a comment, perhaps share your experience singing Johann Sebastian Bach at some point or other. Let's talk a little bit about the process you went through, John, to find these various parts that you've pulled together and made into a new arrangement.
I had several books that list the various presentations of chorale tunes in the music of Bach. And so I was able to, through the university library mainly, to locate copies of these pieces. And when I had collected all of them that I think that I could find, I had to sit down and decide, well, now which one should come first? Which stanza fits this setting the best? How do we organize an organ fugue into something that can be sung and accompanied by an orchestra? That was the fun part of separating out parts for soloists or choir members from the complexities of the music that Bach had written for another medium. As I mentioned, several of the chorale tunes and the motet setting that we heard already were basically straightforward and were performing them very close to the way Bach wrote them. We will be, of course, singing English stanzas instead of German. And then I had to adjust them so that they would blend together one to one. There were several issues, a couple of issues, that I never could quite resolve. I wasn't sure if it would be better to write this in German using the German text or the English text. In fact, the original score that I wrote had it in German, and then afterwards I thought, if I ever want people to sing this, it probably should be in their own language. So I redid the vocal score into the English version. So that's still an option. It can be performed in either language at the discretion of the conductor and the chorus. The other question that I still haven't resolved in my own mind was the keys in which these various pieces are written. Many of them are written in the key of C, several are written in the key of D, and one is in the key of G, all major keys. And I was debating if I should transpose them all into the same key or if I should leave them in the key of the original setting. I chose the latter option. And that's open for discussion, I guess. That would be a possible correction that could be made if it's deemed wise thing to do.
Now, John, as a pastor, you're also aware, of course, of the theology that Bach was working with in his time as a Protestant in Germany. Let's talk a little bit about the spirituality of this piece. You call it a cantata for Christmas, so it's being performed in Advent. What's the message of this cantata theologically?
This cantata, of course, the message is that of the hymn that Martin Luther wrote. And this seems to be a hymn that he wrote that could be used by in a children's pageant. The angels are speaking at the beginning and announcing, "From heaven above to earth I come to bear good news to every home." And then this is the message which the angels spoke to the shepherds outside in the fields outside of Bethlehem at the birth of Jesus. And it speaks about the shepherds going over to Bethlehem to see what they find there, to welcome this baby, which they then realize is not only a baby, but is the King of heaven and earth and so forth. And then it is related to the congregation itself, not just the historic narrative, but to the congregation that is hearing it, that this is the God that we should thank for this gift. This is the Savior of the world. Even though he seems lowly and humble and helpless, he is the ruler of all that is, all creation. And so the miracle, in other words, of God becoming a baby and becoming a human being, the miracle of the incarnation, as it's called in Christian theology, is emphasized very much by the text of this hymn.
In Catholic Europe during the Middle Ages, everyone just assumed what they were taught from the church and from the state, which were combined at that time almost everywhere, the Christian church and the national governments. And so the divinity of Christ was just assumed. The people just accepted that Christ was divine. This is what was preached, what was told, what was drunk with the mother's milk. But this notion that came in with it didn't come in with Protestantism, of course, but it was an emphasis of the Protestant Church, and also of the Catholic Church at that time, that we should not forget the humanity of Jesus, that Jesus, according to Christian theology, was both divine and human, and that emphasis, of course, was in the Lutheran hymns. People needed to remember that and to feel sort of Jesus is your brother.
I think it's a connection.
Uh-huh.
And I think Martin Luther was well aware of the fact that the church at that time had become quite separated from its people. And so the Reformation was not just a process of grievances with the Catholic Church as much as a movement, I think, by the people to perhaps find some relationship to their church by hearing the word in their native tongue and by it being spoken to them in a way that they could understand.
And for them singing it as well.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Very Lutheran tradition to have that available to us to actually sing the text too. And I was going to say, if you don't mind, one of the verses that I think is so beautiful in the English translation, verse 9, "Ah, Lord, though you created all, how weak you are, so poor and small, that you should choose to lay your head where lowly cattle lately fed." I just think that's a lovely idea to think that if you are of the faith where you think that Christ came down as God, this is the moment where he felt what it is to be human and poor and humble.
And it also affirms the natural world.
Yes, very much so.
Where we are and its importance.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's nothing particularly revolutionary about the theology of this particular hymn. It's very standard, orthodox, Western Christian theology. But I think it emphasizes the theme that is sometimes called the Great Exchange, saying that God took on human nature so that humans may receive divine nature. And the miracle of that, the Great Exchange, is a favorite theme in many of our medieval and Renaissance Lutheran hymns.
Oh. John, when you were at a Lutheran seminary, which one was that, by the way?
I got my Bachelor of Divinity at Luther Seminary in St. Paul and my Master's at Wartburg Seminary in Dubuque.
And when you were at those seminaries, was music an important part of what you were taught and what you experienced?
No.
It was separate.
It was minimized.
When you started putting together your Bach collection, you might tell our listeners where you've traveled and where you've what you've experienced of Bach's music.
Well, I have traveled several times to Bach City, which is Leipzig in Germany. Visited there for the Bach Festival every year and the annual Bach Festival, and also other times. And I have visited at Carmel, California, where they have a Bach Festival. They have it every year. I can't afford to go every year.
And you've pulled together an interesting collection that when you were a campus pastor at the University of Illinois at the Lutheran Campus Center there, a collection of Bach memorabilia. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I really overdid it. I collected framed posters and postage stamps and busts and facsimiles and anything I could get my hands on that was related to J.S. Bach. And I had it on display. I had a nice big office with big walls there, and I had room for it all. It's become a bit problematic since I've retired and moved into a small apartment.
So you might be willing to show it to Bach lovers on appointment.
I would.
Okay. Our guest today on Keeping the Faith, John Setterlund, that's spelled S-E-T-T-E-R-L-U-N-D, and Elizabeth Buckley, B-U-C-K-L-E-Y. Information about this concert can be found. Is it found online anywhere, or do people just need to write this down as we tell them about it?
Well, I'll make a Facebook announcement for all of my musician friends and anyone else who is interested in coming. And we will also have childcare available during that. We'll have our nursery open. So what will be really nice about that is if you want to come and bring your children, you can have them play in the nursery. And then after, we'll have a reception.
This is Sunday, December 19th at 3 p.m. at St. Matthew Lutheran Church, Philo Road, Urbana, just south of Sunnycrest Shopping Center. And it's funded by the East Central Illinois chapter of the American Guild of Organists. And so it is a free concert. Julie Beiler will be the guest conductor so that Elizabeth Buckley, who's usually the conducting that choir at that church, can sing the alto solo and be part of that quartet as well as the choir. And John, will you be singing?
I will sing in the choir.
Where? What section?
Bass section.
You sing bass. Did you write a particularly dynamic bass part so you could shine?
Oh, it's great.
Now, you've told me that you are the compiler and arranger, and of course Bach composed all of this music, but for different instruments and different settings. Tell us what Bach did, though, so regularly with cantatas, and how many did he do?
During his heyday, as he was cantor of the church in Leipzig, which he had that job for, I think, 27 years, the first several years, he wrote one cantata every week. And this was for his choir and for an orchestra. And these cantatas range from about 20 to 30 minutes in length for the Sunday morning church service. And this was a weekly duty of his. And it's amazing how much music he produced in this series. We have about 200 church cantatas that he has composed. And it seems like there's at least 100 or so which have disappeared.
Wow. How many years did Bach live?
He lived to be 65 years old, from 1685 to 1750. And the last half of that time he spent at his job in Leipzig.
And before that he'd been an organist and a violinist, I guess. And
a chamber musician, conductor, and various posts in several, about four or five different places in Germany.
Did he sing?
We only have a report that when he was a child, he had a beautiful soprano voice. After his voice changed, I'm not aware of any reports on his singing after that.
Let me remind listeners again, you may join our conversation. 333-9455 in Champaign-Urbana. Elsewhere, if it's a long-distance call, 1-800-222-9455. John, tell us about this second piece you've selected for us to hear that'll be part of this cantata.
This is one of the longer movements. I hope we have time for it. It's the 11th movement, and this was taken, it began as an organ fugue, and that's what we will hear, because in case you missed the announcement, this will be the premier performance. This cantata has not been performed before, and so there is no recording of it in its new setting. So we will hear Peter Herford playing a organ fugue based on this tune, From Heaven Above to Earth I Come. And the text that we will sing to this is this. Instead of soft and silken stuff, you have but hay and straw so rough, on which as king, so rich and great, to be enthroned in royal state.
All right, let's listen to this about a four-minute piece of a pipe organ performance of part of this new cantata. John, tell us a little bit about what happens, sort of the arc of the cantata, where it starts and where it goes. How many different pieces will there be? How many solos and that sort of thing?
Well, there are 15 verses. The last two follow on each other without a break, so in a sense there are 14 movements.
All within a 30-minute time span,
approximately,
roughly.
Yes. Uh-huh. That's dependent on the tempos that we decide to sing. I don't think we'll be able to sing the chorus we just heard as fast as he played it on the organ.
No, certainly not.
Couldn't get in all the words.
No.
And how many solo parts? How many solos?
What we have done is we've divided up each of the verses so that we'll not only have variety in the texture, but we'll also give an opportunity to hear different parts of the vocal sections and also the soloists. So the first verse is the chorus. The second is solo bass and tenor. The third is the soprano section as a whole, as a solo section. Fourth is chorus, then alto section, again chorus, bass section. And then we have a more difficult setting with the solo alto, tenor, and bass, and then chorus with oboe obbligato, and then solo soprano, bass, again chorus, tenor section, chorus, and then we end after a wonderful setting with the solo soprano, alto, tenor, and bass. We go right into the very last chorus.
Again, this will be a free concert at St. Matthew's Lutheran Church on Filer Road in Urbana on December 19th, a Sunday afternoon at 3 p.m. It's free because of the generous grant from the East Central Illinois chapter of the American Guild of Organists. Julie Beiler will be the guest conductor. She's the founding director of the chorale in Champaign-Urbana. There'll be several organists who will be playing parts, a total of about an hour concert. Let's find out a little bit about your background before the University of Illinois, Elizabeth Buckley. You just finished your PhD here, your DMA, Doctor of Musical Arts, last spring. But where were you before that?
I am a native of Ohio, so I'm a Central Ohio girl from Columbus, Ohio. So I grew up there, went to a very small Lutheran college there in Columbus. It's Capital University, and right next door to Capital University is a seminary, Trinity Lutheran Seminary. And they have a wonderful organ there and a wonderful leader of worship, Jan Linker, I believe is her name, and she has a wonderful church choir program. And so I grew up all 4 years of my undergrad, we would tour with our choir, much like St. Olaf does. And we would go to many different Lutheran churches throughout the country. We would pick a region each year, focus on that, check in with our alumni of our program. So that's where I did my undergrad. And then I spent a year studying at the Kodály Institute in Kecskemét, Hungary, just outside of Budapest. And then came here for graduate school, taught for a while at the U of I as a visiting lecturer, and stayed here, met my husband, have two beautiful children, and have been fortunate to have been not only the choir director and the director of music at St. Matthew, but also a Good Shepherd Lutheran.
Now, your two children, are they old enough where you can tell if they can sing?
Oh, yes. My youngest, who is three, aptly named Ronan, he's a big boy, big personality, big set of pipes. So he's got the Irish tenor perhaps in him. We'll see. And then my daughter is much more gifted in the visual arts. She loves to sing, has a very good voice, but doesn't necessarily like to hear me sing.
How old is she?
She's five.
Well, that may change.
Yeah, oh, exactly. I think hearing an operatic sound for a child is quite an intense experience.
It'll get much worse when she's a teenager.
Exactly. Yeah. Then she can sing back at me with all that volume and strength.
How did you manage to go to Hungary?
We have a wonderful program at Capital University where we have an agreement with the Kodály Institute there. Sandy Mathias, who conducts the children's choir in Columbus, has a wonderful relationship with their institute. And we bring students over to Capital to study in math, and they go to Ohio State or other programs. And then we send students over there to the music program. And she heads up a summer program at Capital University where music educators can come and get Kodály certification. And so she really spearheaded this project where now we have, I don't even remember how many graduating students she had last year, but it's probably at this point into the thousands of music educators that have gotten their Kodály certification through this program.
How is that spelled, Kodály?
K-O-D-A-L-Y, Zoltán Kodály.
I'd seen it written, but I'd never heard it pronounced, so I was saying it wrong in my head for many years.
Well, once you've been to Hungary, if you see their language printed, we used to joke because on our student IDs, the words. There was one word on there that was literally 23 letters long. So where does one place the accent on that particular word? So that was always a source of amusement.
Now, you have both a master's and a doctorate at the University of Illinois in the School of Music. Tell us what that experience is like for students who might be considering a graduate degree in music.
I would say if a performer, a musician, is wanting to have a solely performance-based career, probably the DMA or a PhD, say in musicology, is not what they need to get. What they need to do is to go out and to perform in major market areas. So the master's is there to give them a couple years to practice and to make those connections. The DMA or the PhD in musicology is where you really study the art of properly researching music in this case. And what we are always doing is going back and checking with treatises, and we're checking with the musicology, the scholarship that is out there, what it supports. And what I have chosen in my field is I primarily focused on performance practice of the Baroque era. And that's where I found myself being an organist, choral conductor, and singer. Baroque music is something that really excites me. And also the research involved in doing performance practice in Baroque music is both fascinating, I think, and challenging because we have no recordings of these pieces.
Now, when you were getting a master's degree, what kind of opportunities did you have to perform?
Well, I had performances here in town, a great deal of them, and then opportunities to enter into young artist programs. And that's really where singers in my industry go in today's market. And then what happens from that time where they spend that 1 or 2 years as an apprentice in an opera program is then often management will come and hear those students and track them and then sign them for management after they're done with the Young Artist Program.
And you have won several awards for singers. Tell us about some of them.
One of them is a wonderful award by Grace Wilson, who was a beloved music voice teacher here at the U of I, very good friends with John Woosman and very influential. And we have a wonderful award each year that is given to a student through a contest, and that is the Grace Wilson Singing Award. And then I also competed with several other people for the Kate Neal McKinley Foundation Award, which is for students to continue their scholarship within the next year of their studies.
People can learn more about Elizabeth Buckley by going to her website, which is elizabethbuckley.com. Buckley is spelled B-U-C-K-L-E-Y. John Sutherland, Lutheran pastor and compiler and arranger of this new cantata for Christmas that we'll be able to hear December 19th in a live free performance at St. Matthew's Lutheran Church in Urbana. John, tell us one more piece. Tell us about this last piece that you've selected for us to hear a bit from a recording.
Yes, this is the movement which will be our 13th movement, and it is a simple chorale.
It only lasts about a minute and 20
right.
seconds. So
it's a chorale setting, and it's probably one of the verses of this hymn that is the best known. Ah, dearest Jesus, holy child, prepare a bed soft, undefiled, a quiet chamber set apart for you to dwell within my heart. A child's prayer. And in this setting, the lines of the chorale are separated by short interludes of the instruments between each verse, between each line of the verse.
Let's listen, J.S. Bach. We're talking on Keeping the Faith this afternoon with Elizabeth Buckley, Elizabeth Campbell Buckley. Now, women who marry and change their names, who have a professional career, it's a complicated thing, isn't it? What do you call yourself?
I call myself Liz, and professionally I call myself Elizabeth Buckley. I did used to include the Campbell, especially for people who remembered me from my days as Campbell. But especially now, when you try to go to purchase a domain name, that's part of the decision process.
Sure.
And it's extremely important for artists in today's market to understand that you're not just an artist and a musician, but you have to be savvy at marketing yourself. So I figured typing ElizabethCampbellBuckley.com into a URL would be just a little too much.
Too much.
So we simplified.
Elizabeth Buckley, BUCKLEY.com. John, you don't have a website.
I don't.
Now, you're not a professional musician. I mean, in the sense that you have a doctorate in musical arts and so forth.
I think they call us wannabes.
So you're an amateur in the true sense of the word. This is something you've loved for decades and studied on your own and with some, of course, exposure to other musicians. But let me ask Elizabeth, how does he do?
Oh, I think John is a wonderfully creative person who brings to this project especially a passion for the research that he put into the piece and a desire to actually hear this performed. And I think in today's world, it's really valuable for us to rethink our old favorite pieces such as this hymn chorale, and it honors the past of these arrangements by tying them all together. So their origins are fascinating, and also putting them in a new performance is going to be extremely rewarding and fun.
So again, this is the premiere performance, the first performance ever of this arrangement based on this well-known chorale of a Martin Luther hymn by Johann Sebastian Bach. How do you say Bach?
Bach. I guess you can give it with a little bit of the German huh behind. But I think really you can say it anyway. If you want to say Bach, that's fine with me too, as long as you give his music a listen.
It was out of favor for a while. Tell us about how it came back into prominence.
Well, Bach's music was out of favor with some people at the time that he wrote it. He was not wildly popular, even among his own sons, who were also professional musicians of very high standards.
And he had two wives and 20 children, not two wives simultaneously. But
right.
Yes.
And several of his children were fine musicians, but they thought their father was a little too old-fashioned and wrote music that was way too complicated for the tastes of their day. And they didn't really, they knew that it was wonderful, a sign of genius, but it wasn't going to work in their day and age. I think you could add to that, that it wasn't a complete ban on his work. His organ music was always popular. And for instance, he wrote pieces for the harpsichord called the Well-Tempered Clavier, and these were highly regarded. The preludes and fugues in that set were highly regarded consistently, as were some of his motets that were sung in the church. But his cantatas were not doable in church. It was simply too complex. Some people thought they were too operatic.
Too long.
Too long. And too difficult to perform. So his church in Leipzig, for which he wrote most of these cantatas, had very high standards, but they weren't about to market this beyond the confines of this city. And after he died, his cantatas were basically put away.
And it wasn't until Mendelssohn?
Mendelssohn, exactly. Oh, until he unearthed and resurrected. Is it the St. Matthew's Passion? And if you know the St. Matthew's Passion, you can understand why. It has some of the most touching chorales in it, and my personal favorite aria, Erbarme dich, which is just stands on its own. It's so stunning. And so I think that was when people began to remember, J.S. Bach.
This was about 100 years.
100 years.
After
yes.
Bach.
Yes. Yes.
So about the 1850s, he was rediscovered, and Since then, his genius is recognized, and these cantatas are heard in performances and in churches and in concert halls and hundreds and thousands of recordings.
When I first started my fascination with Bach, it was difficult to find recordings of Bach's church music, of his cantatas. It was a rare thing indeed. And then about 1985, which marked his 300th birthday, several musicians from Europe started recording all the cantatas. And now there are three or four, possibly more, sets of the complete cantatas of Johann Sebastian Bach available on CDs, of which I own several.
We're nearing the end of our time. Let me repeat again. Our guests today have been Elizabeth Buckley, who is has a doctorate in the musical arts, in performance and literature from the University of Illinois. She is a mezzo-soprano and an organist, as well as a choir director at St. Matthew Lutheran Church in Urbana, where this concert will be held, this free concert, Sunday, December 19 at 3 p.m. St. Matthew Lutheran Church is on Philo Road in Urbana, south of Sunnycrest Shopping Center and the East Central Illinois chapter of the American Guild of Organists has provided very generously a grant to pay for the instrumentalists for this concert. So it is a free concert. Julie Byler will be the guest conductor. Julie is the founding director of The Chorale, which performs here, and will be performing, by the way, in the Virginia Theater New Year's Eve, their annual sort of pops concert. Great fun. Dan Perino will lead the audience in singing along with some popular songs from the past.
No Bach cantatas?
Not that night, no.
Oh, but we should also remember that that evening on the 19th, Bach, the Baroque Artists of Champaign-Urbana, will also be hosting a wonderful concert. So you can have an entire Sunday of wonderful Baroque music, starting with organ music, a wonderful new arrangement of cantata, and hear many of our local organists all in one place under one roof, and I hope to have other singers from other churches join us.
And if they'd like to contact you, they may do that through your email, which is?
mezzo@elizabethbuckley.com or by calling St. Matthew's Lutheran Church.
At 367-1189. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for this program, and I do thank John Sutherland and Elizabeth Buckley for being with us today. Next week, I'll be interviewing on this program live Courtney Eccles from Chicago. She'll be talking about the education and advocacy that she's involved with, particularly in the state capital of Springfield. Frances Larson, the author, will be with us on December 12th, talking about The Collection of a Lifetime by Sir Henry Walcombe. Thanks for listening to Keeping the Faith.